This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas! This is Santa Claus. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This is our very special Christmas episode, and we're kicking this off just a couple of weeks before the actual Christmas holiday, but I want everyone to feel that you're in a festive mood as we start to get into the holiday, so this way you get out your Christmas cards or, I guess, Christmas emails or Christmas tweets, whatever you do. It seems like that a lot of the stamped letters have kind of gone by the wayside. We don't get the Christmas cards like we used to. I used to send out about 50 or 60 of them, and I would get all that and more each year. And now it's probably down to about a dozen. But I do receive these emails from people, and I appreciate everyone from around the world sending me your greetings. And with this, I wish you the best for this holiday season here as well. Also, speaking of that, I had requested that we have listeners to submit their audio sound bites of how they would like to wish the rest of the listeners a happy holiday season here as well. I am so thankful for each and every one of you, and I have listeners from Australia to Zimbabwe, let's say that. Everywhere, all around the world, A to Z, basically what I'm saying, every country in the world. Thank you guys very much for listening. So rather than just me wishing you well for the holiday, I'm going to let you hear it from some of the people who are our valued listeners. And we'll begin with Michael Trix, who was our guest in last week's episode.
Hey, this is Michael Trix, the rock and roll magician, wishing our great magic community a happy holiday season, hoping you're all back to or getting back to work, and I hope your 2022 rocks.
Thank you, Michael, for that greeting, and I'm sure the rest of the listeners appreciate that too. Well, as I mentioned, we have listeners from A to Z all around the world, so let's listen to one of the countries beginning with A, Australia.
Hi, Scott, and Merry Christmas to all of those Magic Word podcast listeners out there. My name's Belladonna. I'm a female magician in Australia, one half of the Shields Magic Duo and creator of the Magic Martini Mondays. I would love to wish a very Merry Christmas and a happy and safe holidays to all of the magic men and women out there, and would also love to extend an invitation to all of my lady magicians out there to join us on our new network on Facebook, the International Ladies of Magic. Please find us, join us. We'd love to see you there, and have a happy and safe holidays, everybody. See you all in 2022.
Wow, how cool is that? You had me at Magic Martinis Monday. And I want to also encourage everyone, if you are a lady magician, to go over and check out their Facebook page for the International Ladies of Magic. It looks like that would be something that might be of interest as well to many of you out there who are listeners. So thank you very much, Belladonna, for that greeting. Let's go now to back to the United States and hear another greeting from someone here in our homeland.
Hey everyone, John Shango coming at you live. I'd like to wish my family, my friends, my precious, and all of you a very Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, Happy Holidays. A big shout out to Scott Wells for giving us the gift that keeps on giving throughout the entire year, the wonderful Magic Word Podcast. Thank you, Scott. I wish you peace, love, and good stuff. This is Shango, and I'll see you on the flip side.
Thank you, John, and a happy holiday to you and your family then as well. And while we are speaking to someone in the United States, let's turn to everyone's favorite volunteer at magic conventions.
Hi, wishing each of you in this marvelous, magical world a very happy holiday season. Hugs and kisses, Harriet. Love, bye.
Wow, don't you love it? Thanks, Harriet. It was great to hear from you, and I wish you the best for you and your family this holiday season then as well. Thanks very much. And rounding this out, as I said, from A to Z, we're going to go to one from the United Kingdom over here next.
Hi, Scott and the Magic Word podcast people, listeners. A very happy holiday from here in the UK. Yes, it's Martin Cox. Enjoy.
And we have one more from the curator at the American Museum of Magic in Marshall, Michigan.
Hey, Magic Word Podcast. This is Jeffrey Allen from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and from the American Museum of Magic. I wish everyone a happy holiday.
Well, I don't know about you, but my heart is warmed. I appreciate these greetings that were sent by so many people from around the world. Thank each and every one of you. And for those of you who didn't get around to that, thank you for thinking about doing that. And I also want to wish each and every one of you a happy holiday for this wonderful season and time of the year as we stop to give thanks. And I give thanks for each and every one of you listeners who come back from week to week then as well. Well, as I said, this really is a special holiday issue, and I say special because this is our traditional time when we go and speak with celebrity magician Murray Sawchuk. In particular, we have been talking with Murray each December for the past 7 years. This is our eighth year. When you stop and think, we have been doing this podcast for a little over 10 years now, with 650 plus episodes now in the can and out there and available in the archives. This is, it's unprecedented that we have him come back as often as we have, but it's always interesting to hear what's happening in Las Vegas, because that's the entertainment hub of the universe, it seems, and so many magicians who live and work in that area or pass through at one time or another, whether they're doing trade shows or working casinos or corporate events or whatever. It's just, again, a big entertainment capital, and I like to hear what's going to be going on from year to year and what has passed during this year from one to the next. So we, again, are going to hear something a little bit different this year from Murray as to what's been going on. So I'm going to just shut up and let you listen to him, which, by the way, I want to point out for you listeners, if you like watching video, you might want to watch us on YouTube. If you go to our YouTube channel, that's youtube.com/Texas Magician, and just look over there for the Magic Word videos, and you will see this week's video, which is posted, and you can see our video discussion, kind of what we're looking at as we're looking at each other, chatting via Zoom. So you can always do that. And please subscribe to the YouTube channel while you're there. So let's get started with this week's episode, where we wish you a Merry Christmas with our guest magician, Murray Sawchuk, here on The Magic Word. Well, today we are speaking with a friend that we get to talk with from year to year. This is our annual tradition in which we get to have a conversation with celebrity magician, Mr. Murray Sawchuk. And this actually is the eighth year that we've been doing this. So it, as I said, has gotten to be quite a tradition. And I think it's great not only to hear from my friend Murray about what he's been up to, but also what's been happening around Las Vegas, and also just kind of a recap of what's been going on during the previous year here, there, and everywhere. So please welcome my good friend, the celebrity magician. There he is, Mr. Murray Sawchuk. Hey, Murr.
How you doing, buddy? You good?
I am fantastic. I could not be better because we're here together right now and talking. This is great. It's so good to see you.
I love your look. I feel like I need my Christmas Santa hat, though. I feel like I need to get that.
Well, I have one, but mine's just a little bit smaller, perhaps.
I love it. Hang on. I've got to get my hat since you're taping this. I have to get it. So hold on.
Okay. For those of you who are not watching this on YouTube, you can go and see. I've got just a very small hat. Looks like it's a Santa hat, actually, but probably is really more of a bottle topper, if you will. It goes on top of a bottle of wine there. So, and also I am wearing then my Santa Claus sweater here this afternoon then too. So yeah, put on your festive hat. There we go, Murr. Perfect.
See, I didn't realize you were dressing up for the part. So now I'm ready. I feel good.
And I've got then a Christmas cheer as well. Got a little, nice. Little martini. So cheers to you, my friend. Merry Christmas.
Good health. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And also congratulations are in order. For those who may not know, Murray just got married a couple of months ago to Danny. And so congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Sawchuk now. That's great.
Yes. Thank you very much. Yeah, we had a great honeymoon. Just got back yesterday. So now we're back into the grind. You're my first kind of business fun thing to do. And then a couple of days from now, we're back on stage, two shows a night.
Getting everything going. I want to talk about you know, that then too, but going to the wedding for just a moment, I had spoken to Johnny Katz on this podcast when I was actually at your home. He came over to the house and we chatted for quite a while. And he's the entertainment director for the Las Vegas Review, both online and in the newspaper then as well. And he had said that this was the wedding of the year, the Las Vegas wedding of the year.
Yeah, we it was bigger than we thought it would become. You know, you invite a few people and a few more, and then we also realize we're very fortunate to be working in Vegas.
Yeah.
And know a lot of friends right now. You know, 40 years from now, I'm sure no one will know who we are. But we thought, well, let's do this upright. We got through this year and a half of the pandemic, you know, and I thought, well, let's do it right. And so I think we had a great time. I know you were there. You look like you had a great time. So
it was phenomenal. That was, I've been to a lot of weddings, but and my son Sean was with me as well. And we both just talked about that ever since. It's just been wonderful. What'd you have, like about 300 people invited?
We had over 450, and I think we had 400 people there that showed up. So,
and who was it that was the servant? Yeah, the efficient.
The efficient was Paul Shortino. He's the lead singer of Quiet Riot and King Cobra and a bunch of other shows. But he's a heavy metal rock and roll guy. Super cool. Him and his wife are wonderful people. So he married us. Actually, I just talked to him about half an hour ago.
Yeah. Now, how have you gotten to know him?
We know in Vegas, we met years ago. I think they were opening up a Planet Hollywood here way back in 2010. Uh-huh. Something like that at 12, 10. And so we were at a red carpet and we kind of sat at the same table, kind of hit it off. And then from then on, we didn't realize we'd be such good friends, but super nice guy. Really grateful for our friendship and his life in Vegas. And, you know, he works all the time as well. So he's a real, real great guy.
And there were a lot of other people who were there who were celebrities among the rest of us who were non-celebrities, just kind of seeing people around over there that, and some people who just showed up. I mean, like the one fellow that who apparently works at the Tropicana there with you, I guess he does the Prince tribute, and he came and sang a song.
Correct. Yeah. He came in there. Jason Tenner. We had Michael Shapiro from Reckless in Vegas. We had Toby Bo, Baldy Silva from the band Toby Bo, had a big hit in the 70s, My Angel Baby. And we had everything from Peter Lenkovich, Lenkoff, to who's the guy who created Hawaiian 5-0 and MacGyver and Magnum PI, to Pauly Shore and Flavor Flav, and a bunch of cast of crazy characters there as well. We also have Chris Funk, who's a very dear friend of mine,
right?
As a magician. I wasn't very many magicians there because I'm really keeping my magic circle tight with my friends, but mm-hmm. but he was there and a few others, you know. So
it was just incredible. And I like the fact that it wasn't just a bunch of magicians. Obviously, they were your friends and family. And I feel like it was really a close-knit group. It wasn't someone who just kind of, you put out the invitation and everybody showed up. Kind of, I think it looked like you were selected. It was great, for an example, seeing Michael Goddard there too. It was kind
That's
of
cool right.
having talked with him. You had set me up with a podcast episode we did some time ago, just talking about art and the crossover between the type of art he does and the kind of performing art then that we do. He got up, he and Leanne, hey, Scott, good to see you. You know, it was fun all evening long. And of course, the Zoe Bowie, who was the band leader and singer, and then was joined by the lady from the Pussycat Dolls that sang with him. It was great. So congratulations.
That's wonderful. That's it. Thank you. And thanks for being there. We had a really great time. And, you know, once again, there were so many moving parts, but also realizing that me and Danny are both entertainers. We orchestrated our wedding like a show. You know, it's Vegas. I mean, we would have been happy just going to Cabo San Lucas and getting married on the beach. But either it was going to be that or something large and big. And we were really glad it turned out the way it did. And really nice time.
Well, now that's kind of what I was going to get to then as well. It, I assume, had been delayed a little bit due to the COVID situation of not being able during this year. First part, we were still, as we're coming into 2021 here, most of Vegas was shut down. And then slowly you kind of came back on being the first magician on the strip.
Yes. You know, to get back in. So I kind of want to, you know, talk a little bit about that, about what happened as the beginning of the year in Las Vegas and how that evolved as far as working with the CDC and what the state and city guidelines were to start opening up the city again.
Well, yeah, we had to play it, you know, really by ear every week and every day. You know, we got news as they knew, got news. And then we played the legal game of what was acceptable, you know, and I'm lucky because my show over at Laugh Factory, you know, is just me and Lefty. So it's a very small crew and staff. So we, when we did open back up in November a year ago, we were one of the first shows to open up because we could afford to. Our overhead wasn't very high, you know, and the demand was high because there wasn't as many people here, but people wanted to see a show. So it was like, I think it was like, I feel like it was me and I think maybe Absinthe, the show at Caesars was open. And they had some shows down at Notoriety, a showroom downtown, and because they could space people properly, you know, and not a lot of overhead. So you didn't need a lot of people to turn a profit. So and of course, got through New Year's and then to the new year, and then things changed a little more where you could, your distances could be closer to each other. You didn't need this big 25 foot distance from the front of the stage to your first audience member, which that killed a lot of smaller rooms in this town, you know. And then also the capacities, you know, that's why Cirque wasn't open back then and everything else. So we played the game. And also the other show I'm in, Fantasy at the Luxor, they moved to the large theater, which is the old theater Cirque has, and that wasn't being used. So we moved to that theater, which is like a 1500 seat theater, but we could have a max of 300 people in that, according to the way the 6 foot rule was with between people. So I was very lucky. We both had both shows open. And then of course, as you've seen, the rules have been, you know, being looser and looser now as we get a grasp on this, you know, virus and people get vaccinated and everything else. And I mean, we went through a phase where there was no mask for a while, and then we had to do masks again right away. And now we're kind of stuck with that again right now in Vegas, the mask thing. But right now, all the shows are open and they're just rocking it. You know?
Well, that's what I was going to ask about the masks then as well. Were you allowed to not wear a mask on stage, but you could not have a volunteer? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I didn't have to have a mask on stage as long as we didn't bring people up on stage. So I changed my whole show to be, you know, audience participation but from a distance. You know, if I used a deck of cards, it'd be a jumbo deck of cards. So you could see it from a large distance away, or a verbal choice. If I needed somebody to pick something, a name, a color, a word, whatever, it's all talking, you know, it's not.
Right.
You know, or if I had a fan of cards, say stop wherever you want. So, and ironically, some of those things I've actually adapted into my show now regularly. I just don't bring people up because it takes longer to get things going.
Sure.
And people getting up and all this other stuff. And I can get on with it actually a bit better now that I've kind of was forced to change a few things. So.
Right. I think it kind of forces you to be a little bit more creative and think outside the box of what we have typically done in shows to start thinking this way. I remember talking with Alain New, who had a show there in Vegas. And as a mentalism show, you have people normally come up and help you with something. Well, then
that's
you
have
to adapt a show completely and of actually pointing to people and say, you know, what are you thinking of or, you know, or whatever.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was a lot different. And then, as you said, the in addition, there were only so many seats that could be utilized within the theater. And then they had to put, I guess, room in between each of those. And didn't you tell them, I think early on there was the Cirque show because they had a large theater, but it went from, 1,500 to only like 100 people or so they could seat in the theater or something?
Yeah, 300 at that. We were allowing a capacity of 300. Or 50% of the capacity or max 300 or something like that, with a 25 foot distance from the stage to the first row and then spread, you know. And of course, being with MGM, they're really, really cautious and they're very, very good with their rules and regulations. So they even overcompensated, you know. I think we had even more than 6 feet between people. So because, you know, you don't want to be at risk of anyone catching anything or not feeling comfortable, et cetera, et cetera. Very different from a performance point of view, because, you know, in Fantasy, that's a topless review show. It's intimate. It's exciting. It's sensual. Well, you don't want to be in a football field for that. That doesn't really do a lot for that type of an intimate show, like the Crazy Horse from Paris or one of those shows. So that was a little bit of a drawback, yet we still all could work. So we kind of had to give and take with all that, but we all got to work. And, you know, the show, we kind of learned a lot of different things about our show and things we do. And now we're back in the regular theater, which holds 350 seats. And it's a very intimate, you know, cabaret type theater, right, which you've seen, and everyone has a great seat in the show and we're all back to normal. The girls were wearing masks. Now we don't have to, because we're all vaccinated and we're all playing by the rules and all that, and all that stuff. We wear masks into work backstage and stuff, and then we go on stage, we don't. So,
well, I was wondering about how the audience, and that is the tourists in particular, were going to return to Vegas specifically. Did you notice that it seemed like once that things opened, there was just an influx of a lot of people, or was it a slow trickle?
I think it was a slow trickle, but then it really built quickly, because when people, you know, get on Instagram and social media and see things are okay, you know, as humans, we want to get out and enjoy our lives,
sure, whether,
you know, it's dangerous or not. I mean, how many people don't drive the speed limit? Why? Because they're human, you know. You know, how many people do crazy stuff? Because they're human, they want to have fun. That's just the way we're made up. So I think with Vegas, people after a year and a half being in, they wanted somewhere to go, couldn't leave the country really. So, you know, you need to go to New York or LA or Vegas and stuff, but a lot of New York and LA was very, very locked down. They're even still pretty locked down, whereas Vegas opened up a lot quicker, you know, as well as mm-hmm. Texas did, and Oklahoma and many other right. places like that, you know, and
now,
Florida.
Did some of the casinos also have to require their performers as well as employees to be vaccinated? There have been a lot of controversy about different companies or governments have been saying, well, you must do this, you must be vaccinated or else you're going to lose your job or whatever. So was that something that you saw, perhaps you working at the Tropicana, again, the Luxor, by two different management? Is it two different management? Who owns those? Is it MGM or Caesars? Who owns what?
MGM is owned. Luxor owns MGM, you know, or not Luxor owns MGM. MGM owns Luxor Hotel. Luxor,
right. Right.
Yeah, and they own many others, you know what I mean? Mirage and everything else, you know, and Caesars owns the other kind of world, you know okay. what I mean?
Harris. But have they required their employees and performers to be vaccinated?
They strongly required employees to be vaccinated. And it wasn't really a mandate where you're going to lose your job, but they're strongly suggested yeah. that, you know, this is something that should be done across the board. You know what I mean? I know I got the memo and I got vaccinated right away, you know, because I don't want to lose my job. You know
right.
what I mean? And I want to be safe and I want everyone else to feel safe. So, you know, so I've done a lot of things in my life that I haven't questioned and I figured, well, what the hell, you know, it's my
and
job.
Then also, of course, at the end of the shows, most people go out like you go out for a meet and greet.
Yes.
Was that eliminated and then you kind of came back, or what was the status?
Yeah, we held back meet and greets. I did meet and greets. I did meet and greets after my show with a mask. I still do. That's a requirement of Tropicana with my show there. And then when the girls do meet and greets at the Luxor, they have to wear their masks as well. So they're allowed to do meet and greets now. They just have to wear a mask, as does the audience. When they watch our show, the audiences still have to wear masks in our showrooms.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
And so that was what I was going to say too, as far as how that slowly came back. Have you seen some of the larger shows come back? In other words, is Cirque du Soleil show, you know, those are large shows. Are they at capacity then again? And
yeah, they're all back. They're all capacity. They're all back again. A lot of shows, though, you know, now what's happening is there's more shows than demand now. You know, before when I opened in November, I was one of three shows. So our numbers are wonderful. We were selling out easily. And don't forget, selling out was a very small capacity in right. our room because of the spacing and all that. Sure. And there was no other shows and people wanted to come here and have a nice time. A lot of people thanked me for being open, just because, you know, a lot of people were taking risks on doing things back then and I wanted to work. So we did it. But, now we have so many shows open now with big rooms and big theaters, but the capacity isn't back yet. You know, Asia's not open to come over here yet. Europe's not open yet. It's slowly being open to come over to the States, you know?
Right.
But it's, you know, we probably will see the full open Vegas probably this time next year.
So they're mostly domestic travelers, not really
yeah,
international,
exactly.
obviously.
So yeah, and they've been doing that for the whole year. So now it's kind of planed off a little bit. People had some fun, came here, and now they're kind of going, okay, we've been here already. What next? You know, we like a lot of places, you know, want to see European visitors and Asia, visitors from Asia and everywhere else. So that's been cut down. There's a lot of people not coming into this town. So,
well, I have heard then also that Caesars had closed some venues. And so there were actual fewer venues for a large number of magicians and other performers who were looking for places to go and work, and which was part of the issue, as I understand it, why Matt King had moved from Harris where he was. I thought they had closed that room and he had to find another place. And so he moved over to Excalibur. Is that right?
That's right. Exactly. And I think he was already in talks with about moving possibly because, you know, he's been there for a long time. And as you know, hotels change what they want, who they want, and their traffic and who's coming to your shows, you know.
Sure.
I don't know all the details about the deal, but I do know that was in works before before everything happened, you know, and now he's over at Excalibur, which is an MGM property, you know, doing well over there. But I know he used to do two shows a day, at 1 and 3 o'clock, and now he's doing just one show a day. You know, I always question that, because doing two shows a day in a room that holds 500 or 600 people, you know, that's pretty awesome if you can sell that out. My theory is, even if you're getting 150 people, why not have 300 people in one show versus 150 in two shows and work twice as hard? You know what I mean? So, yeah, everyone's got their own business platform and style. So, but now I know from what I've seen, that he's down to one show now a day, you know, which is, I think it should be in this day and age, you know, people aren't selling tickets that fast, you know, unless you're Bruno Mars or Lady Gaga, you know, or Adele.
Right. Right.
That's a different ball game. Because you have mass appeal, but in this town, you got to be a little more conservative, I think, you know what I mean? So also, you know, keep your overhead down, you know, you do two shows, you got to hire staff twice the time, ushers, union staff, all that thing. You know.
Are there still a lot of people who are four-walling specifically? It used to be, of course, I say way back, the casinos were responsible. They would hire the entertainment and everything, and they would they were pretty much responsible to making sure that the thing was making money. So if they're four-walling something, I don't think they care as long as they are being paid and they're getting the lease or they're getting a piece of the action or whatever. My question is now with everything that has been happening, are there more or less four-wallers?
I think right now I think the same, to be honest with you. There's always someone new on the block that thinks they can make it happen, you know? Mm-hmm. I think in Wall Street, you know, there's always another bank going, I can do just as well as Goldman and Sachs, you know, or Sachs or Chase or whatever. So I think there's always somebody, there's always a new guinea pig, you know, and some are know what they're doing and some will just want to do it to say they've done it, you know?
Right.
There's always somebody that has enough money willing to lose it. You know what I mean? So, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's, you know, that's
because you have to have backers. I know a lot of times, unless you have some pretty deep pockets to try and fund your own show for a period of time, because as we've talked about in previous episodes, you and I, about how deep your pockets have to be as far as being able to make it to advertise and start putting those butts into seats before they recognize who you are.
That's right.
You're really nobody outside of the city limits. After they don't start seeing the signs, you know, or the cab backs or anything, they don't know who you are.
100%. So I mean, you still have the regular shows, but you got a lot of people still four-walling and trying to make it happen out there and things like that. So, and this, you know, this really isn't the time to four-wall in Las Vegas. It is a tough market if you haven't been here for a while. And right now there's like 96 shows a night to choose from, you know, and if you're new in the game and you don't have a presence outside of Vegas, meaning a really strong TV presence or influencer presence or followers on online or internet, you're in trouble. People aren't going to know about you, and one billboard or two isn't going to change that.
That was one of the things I talked about with Johnny Katz, and that is how the Cirque du Soleil shows that have been the big elephants in the room have slowly gotten smaller, and AGT is growing to be larger because they've got, like starting with Matt Franco and then, of course, with Shin Lim and Colin Cloud, now over the Luxor, they have the AGT show with Tommy Tin and Emily and other people who have been winners over there. So it seems like AGT really is growing.
Yes. Yeah, it is. I mean, the AGT now has got their own show at the Luxor in the big room where Fantasy used to be, you know, and it's got 7 or 8 acts. I just saw the show a couple of weeks ago. Great show. The video mapping's phenomenal. It's just like the TV show, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had years to get it down right. So how are they going to screw that up, you know?
And every they started that in November. Is that right?
Yeah, they started that not long ago, like 5 weeks ago. Yeah. So November, 6 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty, you know, phenomenal. It's beautiful. But once again, you know, when you have that video mapping and those LED walls and that kind of money to put, you can make somebody doing a vanishing cane look amazing. You know what I mean? You can have somebody doing a floating zombie ball look amazing. Like when you have these graphics that wrap around the whole theater, it's pretty phenomenal. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's, but there, and there's a couple acts in the show that really are phenomenal. You know, there's a few acts in the show that I thought, wow, you know, thank God for those LED walls and lighting. You know what I mean? You know, they're just not that good to be in that show, I don't think. Now, you know, because on TV, you're always made to look really good. You know what I mean? Well,
of course.
You know,
in the best light possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Or really bad. One or the other. But you're always gonna make your acts look great. So there's stuff that I think to the regular viewer who's a fan of AGT, it's phenomenal. They're not going to see that difference or know the difference because they're popular this year on TV. And then once this year is done, the next year will come in and they'll get rid of these acts and bring the new acts. So for AGT and Simon Cowell, it's brilliant.
And I think that is a good idea.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
unlike what they've done again with some of the others, like with Terry Fader, you know, and then, as I said, Matt Franco and then Shin Lim and Colin Cloud, who've got their own shows over there. This is kind of a rotating thing. And that's what I expected, is they were going to be bringing in some different people. But the reason I brought that up is we were talking about, I guess, people who know about this. And so people who come to town usually know about Cirque du Soleil and they know about AGT. Beyond that, they don't know any other Joe Blow. And you said you've got like, what, 98 other shows or something to choose from around town, you know, from downtown and Fremont to, you know, everywhere else.
100%.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit then about some of the shows that have come or gone, particularly magic shows that you might know of that had happened in Vegas here this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird, you know, with this year asking that question, because it's not a normal year. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's kind of like asking what's in the fridge right now, 2 years ago versus what's in the fridge right now after a tornado hit your house. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
You kind of, you know,
good analogy.
Kind of like, oh, I got a head of lettuce over here I can use still. That's still cold. Yeah. I cracked 7 eggs. I got 4 eggs I can put back in the fridge, I guess, you know. So it's kind of an interesting question, because a lot of shows that have come back, some that haven't come back. I think the real truth is, by May next year, who's really still standing? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because once this thing all happened, then the government said, hey, we're going to give you a grant if you apply for this. So a lot of companies got a lot of money, you know, for this grant. So now they got, I mean, we're talking a lot of money
to stay alive, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh boy. Yeah. And some of it's unbelievable, the amount of money they got, but they now got to show every penny they've spent on whatever it is. Well, all of a sudden I'm seeing billboard ads and airport ads for shows that we should never have a billboard ad or an airport ad. Why? Because their producers, I know, have this big chunk of money that everyone knows about, and they got to get rid of it somehow, because, you know, they got to show where they spent the money. Because if they don't, they're going to be in debt for it. You know what I mean? Or whatever the case is.
Right.
Why not take a risk and blow the money? Because if you try to save it or put it somewhere, you're going to have to be taxed on it, or somehow they're going to want it back. So you might as well give it a shot. Blow your money through this stuff. Because there's a lot of things I've seen like that. Because I was trying to figure out the first few months when I saw certain ads, I was like, how is that person got 3 buses wrapped driving down the strip when Elton John doesn't have any? And I know Elton John doesn't need them, but he can afford them and he doesn't have them. So that's, you know what I mean? So that's where that question is. So now I'm understanding these companies have to get rid of some of this money, because if they don't, you know, it's fraud, you know?
Right.
So all of a sudden there's this falsification of these shows got billboards and 7 billboards and 3 buses and 4 cab, you know, 24 cab backs and all these ads. I'm thinking they should be selling out nightly. You should be selling out T-Mobile Arena with 17,000 seats.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because they got all this money and they got to filter it through. So why not? If you already got shows on the strip, whether they're making money or not, doesn't matter. Just spend the money. Give it a shot. You got to get rid of the money. It's not yours to begin with, but you got an act still that you can have a show. So let's put that money in and see if we can get it going. So I'm seeing a lot of that right now. So there's shows out there that are happening right now, but I think in about 10 months, they're not going to be here. You know what
because
I mean?
They won't have the money anymore to back it. I mean,
well, no, and the money they're losing right now in their show, it doesn't really matter, because they can pay. See,
sure.
If I got a deal with you where it's a percentage split, right?
Okay.
And you make a certain amount of money on how much you sell tickets, and that's it. Well, there's no risk to me, right? So now you've never been a risk. But if I get all this money all of a sudden, I go, I'm going to put you on a salary now, $5,000 a week, Scott. You'd be great. I got to get rid of this money, and you're like, okay, that's $24,000 a month or so I'm going to be making. But I got to sell that many tickets. And you know, maybe in your own head, you know, I don't know if I can sell $24,000 worth of tickets a month.
Right.
But your producer who has this money, because you're under their company that has a bunch of shows.
Okay.
Well, they go, well, you're making $5,000 a week for the next 6 months, just so you know, enjoy it. Because I think come July 1st, it's probably not going to be there. But they got to get rid of this money, right? And they've already got you as an act. They got a room that they already got your name on. You're kind of doing the deal. You may be losing money every week, but it doesn't matter, because the company can be losing money, but as long as they got all this money from the government to pay out all these other areas, they're really not in debt, but the show's not making a cent, but they do got to get rid of all this money. So I'm seeing right now with a lot of shows in Vegas, these producers that have a ton of money to get rid of, they're doing, you know, certain shows that have like 14 acts in them. I have 18 people in the audience. These are big shows with big money. I'm not going to mention the names, but they're really, so what I'm seeing now is that's what's happening right now. So everyone's got these buses and billboards and all this stuff. And then of course the billboard ads and the buses are charging up the price.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because, well, they haven't been in business for a year and a half.
Sure. Trying to make money.
It's like a Ponzi scheme, but it isn't. They're really charging this much and people are really paying this much. There's no, you know, there might be some skimming. I'm sure there is. I'm sure in 10 years we'll see some stuff on American Greed, but but their prices are up. But these producers can afford to pay their prices because they got half a million sitting in the bank or more because of the government grant they got given, the relief mm-hmm. money, mm-hmm. and they got to get rid of it. Well, because they got to get rid of it, the billboard company's now going, well, let's check the prices up because we need to recoup our costs.
Right.
And they need to get rid of the money. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of helping everybody in a way,
right?
Because they got to get so indirectly, we're falling all back into our system again. But the real thing is, at the end of the day, you see the show having all these billboards and ads and all stuff. Then you go and see the show and you realize they sold 10 tickets and there's 200 people in the room. Well, they sold 10 tickets and there's 200 people in the room because they're papering because the ads aren't working to sell the act enough because nobody knows who they are. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because they're not on TV and they're not Gordon Ramsay or Bruno Mars or Lady Gaga. But it's working in a business sense to get rid of the money, keep a show in Vegas, keep producers afloat because they still got a show to make their shows look super successful because they got all these darn ads around. And hopefully by the end of all this, and once the money's all spent, it'll all come down and they'll figure out which shows are really making money, which shows aren't. And I think definitely by this time next year, but I think it's going to be sooner, by May next year, we'll really see the real shows that can hang and play the game still. You know,
when you were saying that they would maybe have 200 seats filled, but only 20 of them sold, were they given comp tickets or something?
Always. Yeah, all the time. You know, showrooms do it all the time. You can go on House Seats, Fill a Seats. There are all these free websites that say, Scott, you're having a show, right? And say you got the Houston Herald in there, or Houston Times or whatever the newspaper is in your city.
Okay.
The proper name of it, which I don't live there, so I don't know the name.
Houston Chronicle.
There you go. Yeah. So way off. And so so the Houston Chronicle, and you're like, okay, but you know, it's a slow night. The writer's going to come in. It's a Wednesday night. I'm doing the show. You know, you only have a nice little cabaret. It holds 120. We got 14 tickets sold. I got a writer. Well, shit. You know, whether you want a full room. You want a good write-up.
Right.
So you call every friend that you know, and they get there. Well, this saves that. We can, you know, you can give 10 to 100 tickets to 1,000 tickets to House Seats or seat fillers, and they will actually fill those seats for free. You don't make any money on it. They don't make any money on it, but they really do, because these members who are a part of these monthly ticket clubs pay a $25 or $100 fee a month, and they get to see all these shows for free. Is it good for us or not? It's not good for us as an entertainer, but it is good in the sense that, say we have a slow night and we have a buyer coming, or a booker, an agent, a writer. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? It makes us look like we're selling out. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but when you're in the business, you know all these things that you do to fill a room and not. So that's what I'm saying, but you can have 5 or 10 tickets sold.
But those are local people who are coming in, obviously.
A lot of people are people who come to Vegas often, and they know they know the game. You know, if I was going to Branson, Missouri, I'm sure they might have something there as well as a lot of shows, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like going to Broadway and you go to that middle ticket booth in Broadway, the red and white booth.
Right. Yep, right. Half price tickets. Yeah.
Yeah. And usually any show that's slow, because I don't care who you are, we've all had slow nights. They'll go Wednesday matinee, Chicago. It's slow. Let's give them 200 tickets at $30. Let's go. We got to fill it up, you know, because as you know, like an airplane, once that show takes off, you'll never make money off those seats again, ever. So you may rather make $20 a seat versus the $150 a seat you're making because they're empty, you know?
Correct.
And hopefully maybe those people will buy a souvenir program, tell their friends,
or
buy a shirt or something. So that's the angle of it all. So, yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
When people are going to see the AGT show, you said that you really enjoyed it. Who was it? Was a standout performer? Because I know they have just, a variety there.
Yeah, I mean, the clairvoyants are in it. Clairvoyants, I think, are great. They're a wonderful act, mind-reading act.
Emily, right.
Yeah, I think they're really good. He changed his hairstyle a little bit. He combed it a bit more.
Curly.
Yeah, and I like it. I thought it looked really good. I thought he looked very good. So they were wonderful. The Adagio act was there. They're phenomenal. Both their bodies are ridiculous. I mean, I go to the gym a lot, but I think I need to go twice as much because they look phenomenal. And they're just
inspire you. Huh?
Yeah. Duo Transcend, I believe they're called, and they're phenomenal. Mm-hmm. You know, Preacher Lawson's the host. He's the African-American comedian from AGT. Right. Very funny guy.
Yep.
But they there's some great acts. You know what I mean? There's some good acts in the show that were really nice. So.
Yeah, that's great. You know. And so, again, some magic shows have kind of come and gone, as well as other kinds of shows. Will be interesting, next year to kind of see what has actually transpired and which ones kind of have shaken out. You get to go to a lot of shows, just like I see all the time on Instagram about Johnny Katz going to see all these shows of Barry Manilow and Santana and everybody else and Lady Gaga and whoever's in town, basically. And you get to go to a lot of these things then as well. Have there been some shows during this past year that since we've, and I say past year, really, I guess it's been about since June or July when things kind of started to open and some of these bigger acts started to come in, and not just big acts, but others that may not be as well known, that you would recommend if somebody's coming to Las Vegas, like, yeah, you need to go see Barry Manilow if he's, or whomever. Is there something like that that you've seen? Or
yeah, I mean, you know, Barry Manilow is back, funny you brought him up, and he's phenomenal. I don't care what age you are. If you want an education and entertainment, I don't care if the music's your vibe or not, you know, he's one of those legends like Tom Jones, like Wayne Newton, that walks on a stage and knows how to greet an audience. I mean, if you want to learn how to be a performer, I don't care whether you do magic, ventriloquism, sing, do jokes. For me, one of the greatest things in being a performer is knowing how to greet your audience and walk on stage. That first 20 seconds is everything.
Right.
And a lot of people blow it every time I see it. And people have been around for years. And Barry Manilow, it's entertainment 101. That's how, you know, you want to learn, take a lot of notes. I don't mean the singing. I don't care if you can sing, because I can't. But he's funny. He knows when to speak. He knows how long he should speak for.
Mm-hmm.
He realizes they're not there to see him speak.
Yeah.
And so when he does say something, it is worthy of your listening. Yeah. He's just not rambling and bullshit about stuff that no one really cares about except himself, you know? Yep. So I do like that a lot. I mean, Absence is always good here in Caesars. It's a great show, you know, at Caesars. David Copfield's back, of course, and David's always updating his show. And I saw his show, I think, about 6 months ago or 10 months ago with Danny, my wife, because she'd never seen his show and just loved it. You know, mm-hmm, right. He's always changing something. You know, that's the thing with him, because of the machine that he has and the people he has behind him. He can always work on stuff every day and every week and just get things better and better, because that's his passion, you know?
Right. Right.
So it's wonderful.
Now, you also have been doing a lot of traveling as well. I mean, you don't just stay there at the Laugh Factory all the time in the Tropicana, but also been going different places around the country and in Mexico and elsewhere to perform, like one-off kind of things or different comedy clubs. We've been on, I've seen you on Instagram in Florida or wherever else.
Yeah.
And so you get pretty good crowds, and whenever, how do you book yourself? I don't say book yourself. How do you put butts in the seats, I guess, as being a celebrity magician. I'm ultimately wanting to get kind of like the social media you use, because each year you tend to find out what and give us good advice as to what's the best thing that's working for you this year. Maybe TikTok, or may have before been Snapchat, whatever it happens to be. So, you know, how do you help market yourself so you make sure when you are out of town, people know you, who you are, to sell tickets?
Well, yeah, it's important, I think, to always look at all facets, no matter how old you are, you know what I mean, and what you're doing. I think it's always good to try to be young again and take a risk and be scared and all that. If you aren't scared, then you're not taking enough of a risk sometimes, you know.
Right.
And so for me, you know, I'm always looking at the next thing. I'm always looking for new TV shows, new things to do. TV is always up there. You know, I just shot my first 1 hour comedy live special. We shot here at the Plaza Hotel in the same room. We had my wedding, you know.
Right.
I love the Plaza. I love the owners there. He's a very dear friend of mine, and the CEO, Jonathan. And I love the room. You know, it's one of the last classic rooms in Vegas.
And that's where they filmed Casino, the movie with Robert De Niro. Isn't that right?
Correct. They filmed many scenes within that hotel and downtown.
Because it had that old Vegas vibe.
That's right. Yeah. And that's the only theater next to the Flamingo that still looks like that. You know what I mean? That really is still. And I really wanted that, because I want that look. And sometimes, yes, you can find those other theaters in America. You know, I think there's one in Akron, Ohio, and the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee is a nice one with the old ornate theaters. We all have them. But, you know, it takes a lot of work to keep those theaters running to look like that, you know.
Yeah.
And I love the old vibe of the old theaters. And in Vegas, there's not that many left. We just wreck things and build them again, you know.
Whereas
in
cities, the case. Yeah,
like in cities from Dallas to Houston and all that. And you know, I think Dallas has the Majestic Theater and a few others, you know, they still try to preserve them and keep them in that way. And in Vegas, it's just not that way. So I really wanted to film my special there and get that out of the way. So I did that. So now we're in the process. Actually, as soon as we finish here, I'm getting to see the rough draft of the edit in the studio right after. I'm heading out to see it for the first time.
Is that going to be like a Netflix thing or something?
Yeah, Netflix and Hulu and all that. Yeah, mm-hmm. I own it all. So I wanted to make sure I owned it all, just because that way I can have the control of selling it where I want, putting it where I want. We filmed it with all the Netflix parameters, you know, that they require and need. So that's our, you know, that's where we're going with it first, and Hulu and all that. But hopefully it'll be out early spring next year. Right. But it'll be just over. We shot 90 minutes, but it'll just be over an hour. So that's something I've been working on as well. You know, I'm always looking at pushing the envelope. Where can I go next? What can I do better or bigger? You know?
Right. Right.
So that's kind of the idea. And then what else? I wrote a kid's book as well, which we're illustrating right now. And that hopefully should be out in the spring next year as well. It's called At Nighttime, We're All the Same Size.
Okay.
And it's a kid's book. And it started with my rescue pup, Bailey, and how scared she was of people. And she was only friendly when you got on the floor with her at the same height, or when you went to bed and you were the same height as her in the bed when she'd crawl up next to you. But if you were standing tall, she'd run away. So it was that whole idea. At nighttime, we're all the same size because we're all lying down. So working on that. So I'm always looking at that next thing, you know. Same with YouTube. We're still doing videos on that and TikTok as well as Facebook. I did a lot of TV this last year, you know, doing cameos on CSI, and I just did a Hulu commercial that came out recently. And then I've shot Judge Jerry. It's Jerry Springer's new TV series. And I just found out my episode is going to air January 14th on Judge Jerry. Great. And it'll be a very funny episode. This is Ellen New, the mentalist and dear friend, and it's we try to sue each other, but we're dear friends, of course, as most people know, and it'll be some fun TV because I'm always up for it, if you know me. So I'm always looking for that next thing. So for people who want an idea how to keep going out there, don't ever think you're too good for something or not good enough for something, you know what I mean? Go and do it. If it's exposure and it's not going to cost you much money, do it. Everyone's like, oh, I don't want someone to see that, I want someone to steal something. Let them steal it. That means you're good. I mean, let them, if you're that worried about it, let them steal it. I mean, you know, singers put songs out every day on the radio. A lot of times on Instagram, they'll write a song and they do this purposely. They'll put a song out acoustically with their Instagram and say, hey, something I'm working on, let me know if you like it. They'll put it out there purposely because now it date stamps the song. It date stamps that they wrote it and it's theirs.
Right.
And I do that purposely with a lot of my stuff. I learned that from Greg Fruin years ago when he used to take full page ads out in Magic Magazine. And as soon as he came up with an illusion, he'd put a picture of him in it in the back of the magazine, not selling it, just him, you know, saying that there's his website and I'm Greg Fruin. I love that because it date stamped it. So if anyone stole that trick, he went, here, I put it in the magazine.
Right.
It's mine. Here's the date, July, you know, 2007 or whatever it was. And I love that because you can't, you know, you can patent stuff and copyright stuff, but it's so hard. But when you can date stat something, now you have proof to go back to somebody and go, hey, stop doing it. You know, it's like me with my Vanishing Train, you know, the illusionist. And we're talking the illusionist, meaning that whole damn cast, when they stole my Vanishing Train trick, they made an appearing train. They just reversed it. And no one had ever done a steam locomotive trick ever. None. I mean, Dirk Arthur did one with an Amtrak train in a show, like some flat, looked like a modern Amtrak type thing that Don Wayne and him worked on.
Yeah.
And Copperfield did this Orient Express thing years ago in the late 80s, early 90s on tracks outside, but no one had done anything with a locomotive. And the only reason I did it was because of my father. But after that. And it was mine. Yeah. It was my father's train. After that date stamp in 2010, when it aired in August, there was train tricks from Danny Leary and Europe. You know, there was the illusionist used it because what's his name? Brett
Daniels.
Daniels left the show.
Right.
And he took his big appearing. I think it was, he had a stagecoach and they took that from the opening because that's what they used to open.
Right.
Of course, I'd just done the train thing. And then of course I asked all the magicians in that show from Kevin James to Kalen, to all the guys that are friends and colleagues of mine. They're like, I had no idea you did the train trick on America's Got Talent. I'm thinking 22 million people saw it and you guys had no idea. There's no TVs, no internet. I'm not going to watch. You had no idea. And then one of the people went to a builder in town and asked him to build it, the train. He said, that's Murray's. You know, that's Murray's. He's like, no, Murray doesn't really have it. And he knew, I'm not going to mention any names, but he knew that it was mine. And also that guy knew it was mine. But of course, to this day, they still say they never knew.
Well, wasn't that one of the issues with America's Got Talent? Also saying whenever they had, that was the last thing you did. You'd done a lot of things on up to a certain point, and they said Copperfield's already done that before. Wasn't that right?
No, well, Copperfield put the kibosh on my train trick. So I did the train trick. And then after that, I got kicked off the show. And that was because Copperfield was on that year. And so was Chris Angel and a bunch of stuff. And he wasn't very happy about that. And he thought it was a copy of Hitch, which it had nothing to do with a copy of his. It wasn't even the same premise or the method or anything. It was just that it wasn't even the same train. It was a locomotive. It wasn't, he used a train car. I had a locomotive. If you know, and the thing is, my family's been in the railway for 30, 40 years. Like I have a lineage to use a train, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
So I do know what I'm talking about. So it's funny that a lot of people who copied my train, they copied the same damn train. Like if you look at the Illusionist, it's the same train. And if you know, and you know railways, there's probably about 120 different styles of trains they could have used, mm-hmm. not the one I'd chosen, which is my dad's.
Yeah.
And so it's very funny. So you run into these different things with various people and, you know, things happen and all this other stuff. But once again, my point is I look at stuff to push myself forward, get out there and get people to see me more in any capacity, whether it be, you know, reality shows from being on Wipeout to Judge Jerry to America's Got Talent and that, as long as people keep talking. But my point about it is that put it out there and let people know, because like I said, the train tray, I don't care how many people say that isn't mine. I'm like, well, then prove it. And there's not one person, because everyone did it after I did it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think Kevin James said something like, it was something done in 1763 with a tram. I'm thinking, really? 1763. It was, show me a picture. Well, there's no pictures then. I'm like, exactly. So I didn't copy from 1793, but it was a really good argument because, you know, once again, it's just being seen and getting out there and date stamping it. Cause once you date stamp something as a magician, it's yours. You know what I mean? Now people can steal if they want, but it's flattery. So what you do is you just keep creating new stuff and being ahead of the curve, you know?
True.
And usually people that get into my age, I'm not 20 anymore, they kind of sit back on their laurels, you know? And I've just never been one to do that. I've, you know, I love young people. I love young friends. And I also love learning from them, you know, even though it doesn't feel right, or I'm like, oh, it's not my kind of, I don't really get it. I make sure I try to learn and get it, because therefore it keeps me modern.
Right. Never right. Hit, you are new. Keeping up with everything and the technology and times and everything. Yeah. And speaking of keeping current, then also congratulations on your Genie article. You were on the cover of Genie earlier this year as well.
That's right.
In 2020.
Yeah, that was super nice of Richard to do that for me. And a real nice article, you know, written by Martin Stein, a really good friend of mine who isn't a magician, you know, because, you know, I see some of these articles written by magicians and they figure eight into the same magic talk. And I wanted a different story, not just magic based, because, right. You know, we all love magic, but enough, you know, I want to learn more about life and what you're into other than just, you know, Fred Astaire's books about dance, but there's another 12 chapters of just his life and how, who he is. And I love that, you know? So right. Yeah, so that was a fun article and Martin's super sweet about that. And then on Vanish magazine as well, they were super sweet to put me on that cover this year as well. So yep. I'm very poor. I saw you on the cover. You look great on your, congratulations on your cover, by the way. The mum.
On MUM, that's right.
That's right.
November issue then as well. And that was a lot of fun. And it was also kind of cool timing-wise then as well. We were able to slip in a picture there of when I was at the Laugh Factory with you. So,
yes.
You know, we have been talking for such a long time saying, hey, you're welcome to come and be on the show sometime. And finally this year, I was able to do that. So it was so much fun.
And you did great. They loved you and your material was awesome, as you know. But it was phenomenal. You're always a guest at the show and it's a fun room to play. You know, as you know, yeah. We had some pretty good audiences that week, you know.
Yeah, we did. It was it was a lot of fun. And you and Lefty, when you're talking about earlier about it just being a very small show and you and Lefty, that's true. I mean, it was just like watching ballet in motion back scenes, you know, with what Lefty was doing, or, you know, you were tossing stuff and he was grabbing it, or he was getting ready for the next prop or whatever was happening. I mean, it was just very entertaining to kind of trying to keep out of the way, just but I could see what was happening.
And well, people don't realize that, you know, Scott, you know, you look at Penn and Teller and they just walk on stage, maybe not talk to each other. They do their bit. Go home, you know, or whoever is, you know, even Donnie and Marie, you know, whatever sure. The case, me and Doug aren't a double act, even though indirectly we work that way in a way.
Right.
But you don't even Carrot Top and his right hand man, which you don't see in certain people, even Tape Face or any of these people or Piff. When you work with somebody for so long, you don't realize how much you do lean on them. You know, we just did a show in Naples, Florida a week and a half ago, and we were at a comedy club. So I can be more adult. I can swear a little bit, not that I swear, but you know, I can think and say what I think and do. And I love those moments because now I'm not filtered and things can even be funnier. Right. And my wife flew in for it and her sister, Allie, who's seen my show lots at Laugh Factory, but they've never seen me on the road. Also, they see me on TV as well. And they were like, oh my God, this is like a whole brand new show. And it wasn't the same crap I've been doing for 20 years, but they said it was unbelievable to see.
But you were untethered, basically.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we're not in the, under the confines of a four-year-old in the front row where I can't say right. certain things or I can't go there, which Laugh Factory after 8:30, you can. It's a comedy club, you know. So they were very, they were really excited to see that side going, oh, my God, that, what a show. And I said, well, yeah. And they were like, now we see what Lefty does. Because there's no backstage there. It was just, he was off stage left, like literally just there the whole show.
Right.
And they really appreciated what he did and how he worked with me and how we both worked together. Like, holy smokes, now we see how you guys work for 20 years together and you guys, you know, don't really just think, you just do it. You don't think about it, you know?
And speaking of that, I thought it was kind of cool when you and I were standing in the parking lot there at the Tropicana and you, I just felt it was a special moment. You were saying, you know, it's hard to believe that here I am in Las Vegas and I'm working two shows on the Strip. I'm working here and right across the street over there at the Luxor and working in the Fantasy show. I mean, you have had dreams come true and it's due to your work ethic and your drive and not letting you get bogged down by things that could pull down other people about petty things, but just kind of keep moving on and finding that next best thing. And also keeping up with, as I said, not only technology, but also marketing or business and whatever that it has to be. And not afraid to get your hands dirty, quite literally, because you got a landscape company that you
were correct.
You're out there correct. Early in the mornings, also helping somebody to with their patio or something. And then the afternoon working. I mean, you are just doing it all, my friend. It's great.
Thank you. Thank you. I love to be keep busy. I love business. I love life. And I'm very fortunate, you know, I don't take anything for granted, you know, and people always say, you know, dream it, you can do it. But people, they always forget that other word. You got to really work hard for it too. And it's not always a yes, a lot of no's in the biz, you know?
Well, that's true. And that's another thing is I think it's important. I was just telling somebody earlier this week that I was giving some advice of saying you should say yes as often as you can rather than saying no, or maybe, or let me get back to you, that the answer is all pretty much always yes, because it will lead you to new adventures and new opportunities, right or wrong. And it may work or not, but you're never going to know unless you jump in there.
100%. 100%. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. I've always said that. And you know that I've known you for years, but you know me better than most. So.
Yeah. Well, and I thank you for your time very much. This has been great. I know that you have got someplace you were just before we got on here and you're getting ready to head over to someplace else then as well. And
yes.
You have a show this afternoon?
I don't. I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm actually off till the 15th because in Vegas from December 1st, the 15th is rodeo week. Oh.
You told me about that.
When the rodeo comes in, every cowboy takes over the town. So if you're not a topless review show or, you know, or the rodeo, you know,
George Strait or somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So all the country guys are in town. Luke Combs, George Strait, everybody. But I'm in Fantasy, though, because they do well. So I'm back in Fantasy on Thursday. And then next week, once the Christmas rush comes in, I'm back at my show in Fantasy. So,
yeah, that's great. Well, listen, any words, any magic words you want to give us here as we close out?
Well, I think, you know, anybody who's wanting to do and be a magician full time, or you're thinking about you need a kick in the butt to, you know, get yourself going again, go take a risk, go do something different, go out of your own comfort zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And try something that you said you wouldn't do. You know, I got a couple guys and I know I'm going to make this a little longer, but I got a couple guys who are dear friends of mine and they have the capacity to. I've offered them jobs. At, you know, the House of Cards, who I know Joey very well over there, but they need to do 20 minutes, right? But they're acts that do 6 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But they've done it for all their lives. I know they can do 20 minutes. And I'm handing them an opportunity. I know Joey, if the person's good enough, he'll take them on for a week. If they blow it, they'll never be back. But if they're great, mm-hmm. they got a gig.
Right.
And I've offered this to a couple, 2 or 3 people I know could do 20 minutes that have like 8-minute acts that kill. And they say no. I'm going, you're just killing yourself. Like, just, it's only another 12 minutes. And I know 12 minutes can be a long time, but if you can do 7 or 8 minutes, great. Then go do 10, do half an hour, but don't do an hour all at once and have a crap. Just slowly add new great bits. And after you keep doing them after a year, they become this really cool bit that you'll have for the rest of your life. So never give up, take risks and work hard. And you know, and you always sleep when you're dead.
Good advice from Murray the magician. Thank you, Murray.
Thanks so much, Scott. I love you. Merry Christmas and hope to see you sooner than later, buddy.
All right. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Murray Sawchuk. This is Scotty out. Well, this was great. Thank you again, Murray, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. A lot of really good information, good advice, and good observations as to what's been going on here this past year. I want to kind of call attention also to you listeners to make sure you don't overlook one of the things that he did say, which was, I thought, a real gem, and that is where you often hear people say, if you dream it, you can do it. But that just doesn't happen, because if you dream it, that's all they stay are dreams. You actually have to go out and do something. You have to stand up and go and physically do it. But first of all, you do have to dream it, but then you got to actually take action. And that was something that he mentioned, I think, is very important here as well. Well, thank you guys again very much from all over the world for tuning in and for listening to the Magic Word Podcast. And I wish you and yours nothing but the best in this holiday season as we start to prepare for the new year of 2022. And I hope that some of you are getting out and getting booked and doing some shows, kind of getting back out here in the real world, and everything is starting to pick up again, perhaps to the maybe not to the way it once was, but slowly, eventually, we'll get there. And I thank you for listening each week and for coming back, and want to encourage you again to go and subscribe to our pod letter. If you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you'll have an opportunity, of course, then to just subscribe to the pod letter. It's a weekly newsletter that lets you know what's going to be going on from week to week, and who's going to be on, who's coming up, and some suggestion from the archives then as well. And please subscribe to our YouTube channel. I have been asking about for you to subscribe for quite some time. We're getting closer, just a couple of dozen away from getting to that magic 1,000 number. So if you will, please subscribe to our channel at youtube.com/TexasMagician, and that way we perhaps might be able to monetize that eventually. Speaking of which, one last time here, I want to give you an opportunity to help us with your financial pledge. If you could, again, go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there'll be a tab there where it'll say Become a Friend of the Magic Word. You can watch a video to see why it is your financial support is so important in order to help keep this podcast going. You can give us a one-time donation or an ongoing pledge either through PayPal or through Patreon. Different ways that you can help us financially, and that is greatly appreciated and helps this podcast continue into future years as well. Well, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to never give up, take risks, and work hard. And sleep when you're dead. This is Scotty out. Ho, ho, ho.